Howdy everyone, I'm Sophie Bailey and this is the EdTech Podcast. I hope you've all had great weeks, great weekends and you've totally binged on the Olympics. First off this week, the EdTech Podcast tipped over 10,000 downloads and we're celebrating by having a launch party in October. I would love it if you can come, and if you can make it on the 12th of October, please register via Eventbrite by searching for the EdTech Podcast launch party or see the link in the show notes. Teacher Toolkit, ICT evangelist, Ian Ashman, now the President of the Association of Colleges, Nesta, the Department for International Trade, UK Edu Weekly, the CEO and Education Lead of Here East, and the V&A Museum are among some of those signed up to date. The event is free, but if you're interested in supporting by putting some money behind the bar as a sponsor, please do get in contact at theedtechpodcast@gmail.com. For all you listeners around the world, I hope one day we can bring the party to you in the future. But for the meantime, you can follow any news, updates and fun from the party at #EdTechPod. The launch party is also an opportunity for me to say thank you in person for all the wonderful support I've had along the way over the past 15 weeks. On that front, a big shout out to Education Technology Magazine, who joined as partners of the podcast last week. You can visit edtechnology.co.uk to sign up for their free fortnightly e-newsletter for the latest news and innovations in edtech. This week, the newsletter signposted to the EdTech Podcast interview with the CEO of JISC. Another big thank you also to everyone who got back to me after listening in to the Department for International Trade webinar on the 10th of August. Lots of positive comments, and I hope to bring you some more interesting announcements on the independent school scene in China in the coming weeks. What else happened this week? Well, Nesta are looking for teachers to join them for an innovation workshop on the 31st of August and also on the 1st of September to discuss the current barriers between using tech in schools. If you're interested, the link is in the show notes, and expenses, Amazon vouchers, food and drink are on the table, I'm told. This week, I'm also launching two panel proposals at South by Southwest Edu, and I need your help to vote for these proposals to get us through to the advisory board voting round. One panel features the likes of UK educator and blogger heavyweights Natalie Scott, Teacher Toolkit, urban teacher and ICT evangelist, and the other panel features computing and coding maker enthusiasts Kano or Kano, Primo Toys and Pytop. Both panel picker links are in the show notes, and you would make us all so very happy by clicking on them and giving a big thumbs up. Here's a quick hello from South by Southwest Edu exec producer Ron Reed to tell us about his escapades with Bill Gates and to also give a flavour of the event, which takes place in March 2017. So Ron, I was just commenting on your fabulous accent. Perhaps you could let everyone hear a bit of that.
Well,
now.
I appreciate that, and it's a pleasure to be with you today. But it's nice to be in London, and I've looked forward to our conversation.
Excellent. So first question is South by Southwest as cool as it looks?
Having not been. We sure want to think so, and we work really hard to try to keep it authentic and fresh, and so with that in mind, we're fortunate to get a lot of rave reviews from many folks, so I'll defer to them on it, but we're very proud of the event and what we've done. This past March had our sixth South by Southwest education event. We had almost 8,000 folks from all over the world join us to talk about how to modernize teaching and learning. And so, again, we're really proud of the event and have a lot of fun hosting it.
I think you should be. I mean, I followed it from afar, and I think the way you do it, and also, you know, as it sort of plugs into the other South by Southwest events that take place, I'm sure there must be some interesting cross synergies that happen as a result.
Yeah, it's probably worth sharing that South by Southwest as an event has actually started with a music conference about 30 years ago. And so as a brand, South by Southwest has been really all about kind of creativity and innovation in the music sector initially. Subsequently, they launched a large technology conference and a film festival. And all three of those events, as well as South by Southwest EDU, occur in 2 weeks of March in Austin, Texas.
And do you get a large amount of educators also come along? Because I know sometimes some events, there are different parts of the ecosystem that turn up. So what's the kind of mix at South by Southwest?
Yeah, I think that's what's really hopefully special and distinct about South by Southwest EDU. In the States, many education gatherings are really focused on very specific job roles. And so there are elementary reading teacher conferences, and there are principal conferences and tech teacher conferences. And those convenings serve great purpose and value, but our view is the more diverse the community we convene, the more impactful the conversations. And so I think what's special about South by Southwest EDU is we have entrepreneurs and legacy companies and startups there. We have practitioners from the classroom and principals and superintendents from administrative roles, both in the, I guess what you would refer to as primary and secondary, as well as tertiary space. And so so it's really that mashup of folks that we enjoy.
And so, did you say it's been 6 years or seven?
Yeah.
6 years. So over the 6 years, what are some of your most memorable stories that you can share? So obviously some of these, there's lots of networking events that take place and things like that. I think with events, having worked in them myself, they can be incredibly tiring. But then when that all calms down, you remember some fantastic things as well over the years. So,
yeah, the one that comes immediately to mind is we were fortunate in year three of South by Southwest EDU to have Bill Gates as our keynote speaker. And interestingly, we'd originally extended an outreach and an invitation to Melinda Gates to speak. I was in Frankfurt at the book fair when I heard from the Gates Foundation that Melinda's schedule was challenging, but would we be amenable to having Bill speak? And so, by all means, of course, we were super excited to do that. In fact, for his presentation, we wanted it to run off of a Windows machine, and we are a Mac operation at South by Southwest. So in the final minutes before Bill went on stage, I was looking for a Windows guy who had the hardware for Bill's presentation, which I was extremely anxious about, but it managed to come together in the final minutes.
Wow.
But it was not part of the plan anyway.
This episode was the last of many episodes recorded at EdTechX Europe. Now the team behind the event have just launched EdTechX Asia, and you can follow the early bird link in the show notes. This week, I'm in conversation with Class Tech Tips founder Monica Burns. Monica is a former public school teacher from New York City who now writes, speaks, and helps train teachers around the world on placing the task before the app and promoting deeper learning with technology. The interview delves into using scannable technologies like VR, QR codes, and augmented reality, but also talks about how Monica fell into the tech scene and her hopes and fears for open educational resources and content creation. You can check Monica out at Class Tech Tips on Twitter or classtechtips.com. And finally, it's time I made a confession. I am, like many of you, but unlike some of you, unable to code. Over the last few weeks, I have been musing on the idea of inviting you all to experiment on me by documenting my attempts to code through the various platforms out there. It would be a long and slow and painful process, but perhaps it will showcase some of the experiences of other parents, teachers, and students, and what lessons, if any, we can learn. If this sounds like an idea you like, hate, or are otherwise indifferent to, let your thoughts be known via the Twitter poll in the next week. Have a great week, everyone. So I'm sat here overlooking the Regent's Canal. The sun has finally come out and the weather has been rather intermittent, I'd say. And I'm sat here at EdTech Europe with Monica Burns from classtechtips.com. So welcome, Monica.
Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. I'm very excited about it. So obviously for people in the States, I think they're going to be very familiar with who you are and your website and everything. For those who are less familiar, could you give us a little summary about what it is you do?
Definitely. I'm an ed tech and curriculum consultant based in New York. I'm a former New York City public school teacher with experience one-to-one in the classroom. And so class tech tips started while I was teaching after speaking at a few events and having people come up and ask for my website and where they could find more information on the things that I shared. I started a little over 4 years ago. And so that's really grown into beyond just free apps and iPads where I started to technology tools for all classrooms. And now I have the opportunity to work with teachers. So I travel to schools and host teacher trainings and workshops. And I have a book that came out earlier this year on scannable technology from Corwin Publishing.
Okay, great. So I think I had a quick peek of that on your website. So was that VR and AR as well?
Yeah, so it focuses on QR codes and augmented reality. Yeah. So really presenting a framework for deeper learning with scannable technology. The methods, the ACES framework I introduced is definitely applicable to other types. VR and virtual reality has been so exciting to see the growth just in the past 6 to 10 months really becoming more equitable.
And going back to the classroom, so what kind of practical examples of VR in the classroom have you seen that, you know, have really helped in terms of learning outcomes?
Well, one tool that I love is Nearpod. And so it's powerful as a presentation instructional tool, but I really love it from a formative assessment standpoint of just checking in and being embedded with where students are at throughout a lesson. But they've introduced a handful of virtual reality modules built into their lesson. So you can take students on a virtual field trip to a coral reef or to the pyramids. And it's really been exciting to see it done in a way that doesn't feel isolated just for the sake of a virtual reality experience, but something that is clearly tied to a teacher's instructional goals.
So I think for a lot of people, when they think of VR, they think of the headset. And, mm-hmm. you know, so in that case, is that a class of 30 kids with headsets on, or is it, you know, using their smartphone so it's a bit more accessible for a mass of students?
That's a wonderful question. And I know I tried on an Oculus Rift a few years ago and I said, wow, this is great, but how is this going to be something that you can translate into, you know, teaching and learning when schools don't have enough money for the devices they would like for every student to have? So over the past, I would say the past year or so, seeing the Google Cardboard become a device where you could use a smartphone, whether it's Android or iOS, and kind of slip that in and be ready to go. But I think virtual reality is so much more than just the headset from a classroom teaching and learning perspective. You can have students on their iPad standing up and moving in one direction or another, looking at a screen that's in their hands, as opposed to a split screen with a viewing device.
It says on your website, your mission is to help educators place the task before the app and promote deeper learning with technology. So what do you think would you identify as some of the best examples of that?
So it's so easy, and I do a job of curating resources, right? So it's so easy to come out and say, here's the 30 best this or the 10 apps for that. And I do that because I think it's a great way to get people interested and excited. It's a nice little stepping stone. It's comfortable.
Someone told me the other day that's called listicles, which
right.
I hadn't heard that before.
Right.
I quite like it.
And it's one thing from that blogging perspective, right? It's the clickbait that people get excited about, the five ways to, you know, the make the best fill in the blank recipe.
There'll definitely be a few five trends from EdTech Europe.
Yeah.
I might write one as
right,
well.
Right, right. And I do it because I think it's a great way to organize information and get people excited about resources. But, you know, we have to move further than that. So what I love are creation tools. I'll be sharing Adobe Spark later today as part of my presentation. So I'm really excited about the creation tools that they've developed. I've done some work with Book Creator, which is based over here and has some powerful mobile apps. And I think that's really where the deeper learning comes in, you know, creating experiences for students to generate content that demonstrates their understanding, producing for an authentic audience, you know, and there's some wonderful tools. I just named, you know, three as we've been talking for doing that, but it's got to be larger. So we need to really think about what our goals are for the students that we're working with.
And how long were you an educator for in New York?
So I was in the classroom for 6.5 years. My last 2 years were one-to-one iPad. And so I was looking to transition a new school environment. And at that time, I was doing some work with a nonprofit organization called Lit World. They're the folks behind World Read Aloud Day, if you've heard of that really special event. And so I worked with them on a pilot program for using iPads for family learning, so literacy learning activities, coming together for storytelling and a wide range. And so that was happening. I was looking for something new, and that gave me some flexibility to do the traveling and teacher training that I do now. And so it all kind of came together that the next move wouldn't be to another classroom, but to having a little more freedom to bounce around and work with teachers all around the world.
And did you grow up as someone who was always really involved in tech, or did tech come about, tech in terms of apps and all the rest of it, because you think it had that place in helping you as an educator?
I think that, you know, it all kind of came together in a way that I could not have anticipated. When I first got into the classroom, you know, we had chalkboards and overhead projectors.
As a teacher. Wow. Okay.
And so within a few years, you know, being able to jump in and wrestle the cords on the iPad cart that I had, you know, petitioned for as a grade team leader, you know, that was a huge leap. But then thinking about all the little things that kind of brought me here, you know, being tapped into to help run the social media at my school really prepared me for the blogging work that I didn't know was coming, but happened just a few years later. And it's been interesting to see some pieces fall into place that I don't think I would have seen coming, but just we're really, you know, it's more than just the technology. It's so much about the pedagogy and the best practice. So when you see anything, a great chapter book, a piece of literature, high interest, you know, news articles, anything that's going to make this experience better and more rich for students. And in this case, you know, so much technology came in, and that's really where my passion has grown from.
So yeah, I think, yeah, it's moving so quickly. Going back to the actual teaching side of things, mm-hmm. what was the school like that you taught in?
So I taught in a public school in New York City in South Harlem, right above Central Park, where when I started, we were a traditional local school. So students from the neighborhood would come in, and that was our student population. Over the course of my tenure there, we became a federal magnet school with a theme of environmental stewardship. And so part of the funding that was used for iPad purchases, you know, came from this mission to be more eco-friendly and paperless, as well as developing really rich experiences for students to interact with content. And that's really, you know, when I left, and it's funny now because I do so many teacher trainings, and sometimes I get called out by the audience when I give an ecosystem example or endangered species example, because it's so much of my kind of comfort level from an instructional standpoint, having spent my last years in the classroom really focused on the environmental stewardship component and how that threads itself with technology tools.
And what was your own education like? I mean, how different is what your talking to people when you're on the road compared to how you remember growing up and being educated?
I mean, one of my most memorable technology experiences was as a student in the computer lab with a washcloth or a towel, you know, kind of taped over the keyboard so you couldn't watch your fingers as you learned to type fast. And it's, you know, where I remember being, gosh, maybe 10 or 11 years old, and the words per minute being posted on the board as if we were in secretarial school. And it's funny now because I'm a very fast typer, and I used to joke that if everything, you know, didn't work out, I could always fall back on that skill. But that's, you know, really one of my most memorable experiences was this charting of words per minute and never quite being in that the top half of the class. Yet, you know, I look back and think about how much things have changed. And I was very lucky to be part of an undergraduate degree program where, you know, they had us in the schools from the first semester, every semester. So even if they weren't teaching us about using technology and that technology integration, we were seeing it start to happen in small ways before entering into the workforce.
When you're looking at broad education in the US, are there particular things that you think are sort of top priorities in terms of education compared to perhaps some of the things that we have going on over here?
Well, one of the big pushes and from that office this year has really been around open educational resources. Mm. And so that's been exciting. And to be honest, you know, it's, I thought it might move a little faster. The momentum really felt like it was there at the beginning of this year. And it's always interesting to see what kind of takes off and runs with it. I think there's some big partners that are involved in that space, some of which I can't really go into for reasons of with my own involvement in them. But we have ISTE in the States, the big technology conference in Denver at the end of this month. And, you know, I have the privilege of speaking not only there, but at some of the booths with some of the folks on the expo floor. And I think it'll be exciting to feel that energy around OER again.
I read about that last night. So it basically, if I understand it correctly, it means that any initiative that has funding from the US government on education, by that fact, has to then be open source or be shareable with others. Is that correct?
Yeah. And so the goal behind that, you know, as I understand it, and what really stands out for me is this idea that teachers will have an open library of content. And whenever you have an open library of something, you know, quality control can be an issue, especially if it's an overwhelming amount of quantity of content. You know, so I really hope that, you know, that becomes part of that, what everyone's kind of looking for, and just organizing content that is great work to bring into the classroom, high quality.
More work for you to kind of dig out the real gems.
Yeah, as a curator of content, it's always something, you know, I'm interested in, and kind of seeing what that communal rating system will look like on different platforms, how people are sharing, what that workflow is going to look like, what kind of search features, is it just another kind of Google for lesson plans, or am I able to really download some quality iBooks that a teacher, you know, in Maine has made with iBooks Author that I can now bring into my classroom and enrich the experience of my students.
Going back to resources, so I was on your website last night and it's rather beautiful, so whoever's designed that, or if you've designed it, congratulations to them. Obviously you've got your different resources on different areas. You know, which one of those resources is most popular?
It's been interesting to see what people get excited about. And for me, you know, more so than, say, the clicks on a page, it's more the social media shares is my measurement. Yeah. And of course, those two things can be related. But I've really been excited to see how people are responding to creation tools as opposed to consumption tools, and what kind of things they are just looking to do on different devices. So, you know, I mentioned some creation tools already, and I've seen some popularity with the web-based or the Chromebook-friendly ones that can be used on multiple devices. So really those things that are BYOD, bring your own device, or device agnostic have been generating a lot of excitement.
And are there any other resources or websites or sort of curators who are doing something similar to you that you rate as well and you follow?
Yeah, there's a handful of folks that I follow on Twitter. Even just looking at my Class Tech Tips Twitter handle, you'll see that there's some lists that I have. I'm an Apple Distinguished Educator, and anyone in that community is someone who I really value their opinion on different resources, especially someone who might be doing something different than what I'm doing in terms of working with different teachers. So if, you know, they're doing something really exciting with media literacy or journalism in their high school class, you know, that might not be the work that I'm doing with teachers, that focus more on, you know, kind of K-12 literacy and math best practices. And so those are the things that I get excited about. I've been a blogger for Edutopia, which is based in California, for a few years. And so that's another place where those authors, the bloggers that are on their site, are ones that I go to, both with a quick message as well as just kind of scanning their most recent contributions to the site.
The event here today is, I suppose, more investor/startup focused than educator specific. How have you found today in terms of, you know, the things that you've heard, and how do you think the investor world or community that are funding some of these innovations, are they close enough to the end product, I suppose?
So, you know, this morning I sat on a panel about disruption of, you know, disruptive innovation and what it looks like to, you know, really think about what learning environments are stagnant, which ones are taking the model and shifting the way we think about traditional education. And so I think sometimes when we're kind of in our world here, and I spoke at South By last year, you know, we feel the sense of urgency. You know, we get, you know, really pumped up and excited, but then we have to step back and think about, you know, not slowing down as much as respecting the process that takes at different levels to really put change into action and being respectful of that so that we can have the greatest impact. And it might feel like we are not, you know, moving away from our own visions, but we need to make sure that we are in line. I heard someone this morning talk about those, thinking about your relationship as a partnership, and really working in tandem is going to be a lot more effective than pushing out a solution to someone.
Agree with that. And it does take that bit of patience. Okay. And then have you been to London before?
I have, but it's my first time in a long time. So I've had a chance to play tourist the past few days.
What have you been doing?
So I kind of did the long walk around seeing Big Ben and stopped in Harrods for breakfast yesterday. And so trying to get a play in the schedule for this evening before I head out tomorrow. So it's been a short trip, but I feel like I've covered a good amount of ground. And coming from New York, where I'm used to walking a few miles, it's been a nice transition to look up and see something new.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Monica, and pleasure to meet you.
Yes, likewise.
Thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you have a fantastic week, and don't forget to sign up to the launch party on Eventbrite. You can also rate and review on iTunes, where you can share the podcast to any friends that you think may enjoy. And see you next time. Bye.